The real problem was we were flying in the wrong direction. Margaret Adams was in the kitchen of their house cooking American chop suey, which in spite of the name had no relation to Chinese cuisine. To her, the dish was just okay. That's how she felt the first time she tried it aboard Valkyrie. That time Joe made it, and he had been not so much proud as nostalgic for a home-cooked food from his youth. She was making the dish that night because it was relatively quick and simple to make, because the boys liked it, and because her pregnant body wasn't fond of spicy food, so she wasn't making the jambalaya she really wanted. And because she missed her husband. Mostly because she missed him. She wiped away a sudden tear. Pregnancy hormones made her emotional. It had happened with the boys, also. Crash! She cringed at the sound from the boys' bedroom. Is that something I need to know about? She called out loudly enough to be heard above the boiling water in the pot. No, Mom, Renee shouted back. Is it something you will regret not telling me when I find out about it later? Oh, Mom, Jeremy groaned. We're fixing it. I'd better not hear you using any power tools. The boys didn't reply. They didn't need to. She had locked up all the power tools in a cabinet in the garage after she changed the lock since the boys knew where their father hid the key. Come set the table. 5 minutes. 3, she insisted. Then you can sit here with me while you do your homework. Oh, Mom! Humming a song to herself while she opened a can of stewed tomatoes, she dropped the can on the counter when the bass alarm sounded. Erie, erie, warbling up and down in intensity. Oh, shit. There wasn't a drill scheduled, and that wasn't just the base alarm. It was the air raid signal for the entire planet. Mom! The boys raced into the kitchen, lips trembling, eyes wide with fear. They knew what that alarm meant. Are we? You know what to do. She turned off the stove as she went around the kitchen island to herd her sons into the emergency shelter under the workshop attached to the garage, the most secure room in the house. That's where she was supposed to go when an alarm sounded. Where she wanted to go was to the base where she could don a powered armor suit. Except, she patted her belly, she couldn't fit into a mech suit. And whatever the emergency, it would surely be over before she crossed the base to the Marine Corps section. And she wouldn't leave the boys. Couldn't leave them. Mom, Jeremy tugged at her sleeve. Pup-Tart will protect us, right? It has to. Pup-Tart will slay, she assured them, and to chase away her own fears. Pup-Tart would slay any enemy who dared attack Jaguar. What made her mouth dry was knowing that every species in the galaxy understood Jaguar was protected by an invincible sentinel, yet somehow had apparently attacked anyway. That only made sense if the enemy had the means to defeat a sentinel, which was only possible if the enemy had their own sentinel. The outsider twice had attempted to steal a sentinel. Skippy said it wasn't possible for anyone to awaken an elder killing machine until a specific time. Skippy said a lot of shit, and not all of it was true. With the boys huddled in the cramped underground shelter, she crouched beside them and reached into a pocket for her phone. The screen was displaying a message. Air raid warning. Remain calm. Remain calm. She tried to call several people, anyone. There was no answer, nor could she connect to the base network. The entire planetary network must be. Hey. A familiar voice breathed in her ear. Happy? Happy was the communications and coordination AI for all of Jaguar. It performed a function similar to Grumpy on Earth, though with fewer resources available since the United Nations had been reluctant to expend valuable AI substrate on a system that served such a small population. The Navy had chipped in part of their budget, upgrading Happy to host the local defense C3 system, command, control, and communications. Skippy had set up a submine in the substrate that was distributed on, under, and above the colony world. With painful lessons learned from setting up the Grumpy submind on Earth, Skippy had programmed Jaguar's AI to be relentlessly upbeat and optimistic, pleasant, friendly, and cheerful. The initial users of the new system loved it. That lasted 11 minutes. Then Happy plunged into a deep depression, reluctant to speak with anyone, writing dreadful gothic poetry, and repeatedly calling the military base suicide hotline. Skippy attempted to fix the submind. The situation only got worse. Determined not to have another black mark against his reputation, Skippy tried over and over again to fix Happy, only to make it worse each time. Until finally, the civilian and military authorities pleaded with him for the love of God to stop helping. Insulted, he refused to have anything to do with Happy. Slowly, Happy got better. The submind still talked like it had a case of severe depression and was treating the condition with whiskey and prescription sedatives, but it was basically functional. It told anyone who would listen that the only thing keeping it alive was its deep, abiding, endless, all-consuming hatred of Skippy and the hope that someday it could rejoice at the news that the supreme asshole was dead. Hey, Happy was anything but happy. Listen, okay? I'm listening, Margaret mentally urged the AI to speak faster than its usual slow, ponderous, depressed lethargy, and knowing that was never going to happen. What is going on?
Oh, that, yeah. Your star. It's not your star. They don't, he sighed, belong to anyone. Possession is really an abstract construct anyway.
Why is the air raid alarm sounding?
The star here? It sort of just exploded. You won't see the effects for another, about 6 minutes. I just thought you might want to know. No biggie if you don't care. I don't care. Why should I?
The AI broke down sobbing.
Life is meaningless. It is such...
What is Pop-Tart doing?
Oh, it... That thing doesn't talk to me. Nobody likes talking to me.
What is it doing?
Nothing I can see.
What is the Navy doing?
Two ships are preparing to jump away before the shockwave hits. Other ships are powering up their jump drives, but...
Another drawn-out sigh.
They won't be ready to jump in time. Hey, the civil authorities want me to inform the public about the expected effects of the solar flare, as if any of that will matter. Do you want to hear? I can just go away if you don't. Most people tell me to go away.
They tell me.
The high-energy photons of the initial flare will scorch the surface here, boil the upper layer of lakes and oceans, and blast away the upper layer of the atmosphere. Then the shock wave of charged particles will hit a few minutes later and strip away a third of the atmosphere that is left. It will be pretty much a disaster.
Oh my. She reached out to wrap an arm around the boys as they huddled to her.
Hurry!
The air raid alarm cut off. Someone must have decided the alert was not the proper way to warn the population about impending doom.
Solar flares will continue for several months, at least. Elder weapons are really nasty stuff.
They elder weapons?
Yeah. One detonated here and destabilized the star. Partially iron-bombed it. That's a bad thing. Hey, sorry.
It spoke even more slowly.
This incident has got me really pissed off.
It sighed.
I'm pretty sure you can hear the, rage in my voice.
She hugged her boys fiercely. The base had 5 air raid shelters that were each equipped with independent air supply in case of chemical or biological attacks. People in those shelters could survive for several weeks. No, there was no way she could get to the base in less than 6 minutes. She and Joe had chosen the site for their house because it was far from the base airfield, good for sleeping babies not being awakened by the roar of dropships lifting off. It was also close to the outer limit of the base. What could she do? Nothing. Jaguar was supposed to be safe, safer than Earth. With both planets protected by invincible sentinels, an enemy wanting to make a dramatic and futile statement logically would attack humanity's homeworld, not a sparsely populated colony. What was the point of... Unless Earth had also been attacked, or soon would be. What could she do? The Marine Corps had told her excuses were not acceptable. She was expected to adapt, to overcome any obstacles. Her Marine Corps training never covered survival on a planet that was soon about to lose its breathable atmosphere. It had been a good day for Admiral Chatterjee, commander of the UN Navy component to Jaguar. He had slept well, despite his mind still recovering from the shock that an outsider was responsible for the raid on Moonbase Zulu and the attempted theft of two sentinels. The initial shock of that revelation was over. He had trained himself to compartmentalize his mind. Losing sleep would not help him counter threats to his area of responsibility, so he usually slept peacefully. That morning, the coffee had been particularly good, a recent shipment from Earth. A cruiser had completed maintenance and been backed out of the space dock for a shakedown cruise, freeing up the space dock to work on another ship. The assault carriers Hudson Bay and Baltic Sea were working up for an exercise that was scheduled to commence in 3 days and were proceeding without any major issues. The next morning, he would be playing golf with the garrison commander and the planet's governor, plus some supposedly famous retired athlete who was visiting from Earth. His staff had prepared notes so he could politely pretend to care about baseball, rugby, he couldn't remember. At the moment, he definitely could not remember trivial details, because the star had just exploded. There had been no warning. It had been a typically uneventful day, then the detonation of an Elder weapon was detected. The star had erupted instantly, sending out a powerful flare in the direction of Jaguar. The flare had been aimed at the planet. Chatterjee knew of the approaching flare through a sensor feed from the Sentinel, which did not have annoying speed of light restrictions. 6 minutes. He had less than 6 minutes before the hellish wave front of light-speed photons reached the planet. Every ship and space station capable of raising defense shields had those devices energized. Ships that could jump before the following shockwave of charged particles slammed into the planet had been ordered to jump. That was all he could do. Ride out the shockwave, then send down dropships to assist any survivors on the surface. That was silly. By the time the dropships reached the surface, the only survivors would be in the base air raid shelters. Everyone and every other living thing that needed breathable oxygen would be dead, either scorched by the flare or suffocated by lack of oxygen. What should he do? What could he do? The smart move would be to wait for the atmosphere to settle down. It would be suicide for dropships to fly down through the hypersonic winds that were predicted. For no reason, he just remembered that the tomatoes in his backyard were turning red, and his wife was eagerly anticipating fresh vegetables for cooking. His wife, their daughter and her husband, his grandchildren. He couldn't do anything for them, not even call them. The planetary network was restricted to necessary military communications, which was itself silly. There wasn't anything the military needed to do that his ships weren't already doing. What,
hey, Admiral Chatterjee?
Happy sighed into his earpiece.
Like, if you care, I have a message from Pup-Tart.
A message?
Yeah, I get it. You're busy. Well, we can talk some other time. If,
the AI sighed,
there is another time.
What is the message? Chatterjee demanded.
Like you should get all your ships and space docks and whatever either below 600 kilometers altitude or above 1700 kilometers.
Why?
Pup-Tart didn't say. Sentinels don't talk to me. Does it matter? Does anything matter? Life is so pointless
that what exactly was the message?
What I said. Oh, also, Pup-Tart advises your ships to turn and burn?
Chatterjee did not waste time, for there was no time to waste. Ship captains would have to make their own judgment calls based on their current altitude and readiness for flight, but he authorized full emergency thrust. That included boosters for ships so equipped, boosters that were by regulation never to be used in the crowded environment of orbit. The Coast Guard would just have to deal with the traffic chaos later. Ships that were able to turn and burn did so, getting as high or low as they could. That left the transport ship Zambezi, its engines powered down, in a parking orbit at 1,200 kilometers above the surface. That ship had no means to move under its own power, not for several hours. Chatterjee's staff urged the ship's small crew to get into dropships, not escape pods, and fly toward the planet, dropping altitude, not attempting to climb. It was going to be close. Happy, did Pup-Tart tell you why it wants ships above or below a particular altitude?
Like that thing would ever speak to me about anything important.
Can you ask?
Sure, whatever. Nope, it's busy.
It didn't give you even a hint?
No. Well, except, hey, unless that countdown thing is important.
What countdown?
Well, there's a clock, you know. Oh, I forgot to tell you. Sorry, I'm not having a good day. I never have a good day.
Show me the clock, Chatterjee demanded, ignoring the uproar around him in the space station's command center.
Okay, okay, Happy sighed. If you want.
A clock appeared on the holographic display sphere that hovered above the center of the ring of consoles. It was counting down from 3 minutes, 15 seconds when it appeared. Next to it was another clock, counting down from 4 minutes, 39 seconds. Chatterjee could see that second clock was tracking the photons of the flare that were racing at the speed of light toward Jaguar. Whatever event the first clock was tracking, it wasn't going to happen 1 minute and 24 seconds before Jaguar received the worst sunburn ever. What was... Did the Sentinel intend to do something? Shoot back at whoever or whatever had deployed the Elder Weapon? That wouldn't do any good for the inhabitants of Jaguar unless the attacker was preparing to deploy another Elder Weapon, one that could crack the planet. As if another weapon would make any difference to an already doomed world. The dropship from the transport ship still hadn't launched. Contact the Zambezi, he ordered his communications officer who was shouting at someone. Whatever that officer was doing, it couldn't be anything actually useful. Major Hurtado, contact the Zambezi now. Why hasn't their dropship launched? Hurtado didn't protest. Abruptly ending the call he was on, he contacted the transport ship. A few moments of hurried conversation later, he reported,
Admiral, they have 7 aboard the dropship, waiting for 1 person. ETA for that last person at the docking bay is 90 seconds.
Chatterjee connected his earpiece to the call.
This is Admiral Chatterjee. You have no time to wait. Launch now. That is a direct order.
Technically, the Zambezi was a civilian ship. His authority didn't extend to decisions of the crew that affected only themselves.
Admiral,
the woman's voice was strained.
We are waiting for...
You have no time to wait. 7 of you can survive, or all 8 of you die.
There was shouting in the background. Then the call ended.
Get them back, Chatterjee snapped.
Hurtado held up a hand.
They're refusing to call.
Before the Admiral could reply, explosive charges slammed open the transport's docking bay doors and a bulky cargo dropship rocketed out. The spacecraft cut thrust, flipped over, and burned hard to decelerate, falling toward the planet.
It's going to be close, but,
a navigation officer stated, they should get below the lower boundary with 20 seconds to spare. Margaret huddled with her boys, holding them while they trembled and asked questions she couldn't answer. They were trembling because they sensed her anxiety despite her words of assurance. 2 minutes, 47 seconds. That was the time until the flare scorched the surface and boiled the air, according to the base network that was finally providing some information. She still couldn't call or text anyone. Her mother had taken the car into town with friends, possibly was driving back to the house. Not that she would get there in time. It didn't matter. The air would burn. The heat would be so intense, the atmosphere would boil off into space. Any water on the surface would flash into steam. Lungs that attempted to breathe in the superheated air would be scalded. Death would be a blessing. Better to die quickly than to suffer. Better to look death in the face than to huddle in fear.
Boys,
she stood up, gently tugging their hands.
Let's go out into the garden. But, Mommy,
Jeremy's lips shook.
We're supposed to stay under shelter during an air raid. There is no air raid.
She opened the door on the side of the garage and guided her sons outside.
If enemy ships were overhead, masers and railguns would already have hit the base. That's right.
Rene brightened a bit and stuck his tongue out at his brother.
You are such a fraidy cat. I wasn't afraid.
Jeremy swung a fist to thump his brother, but their mother held them apart. No fighting.
But
no fighting.
Look, this is a nice sunset. Let's watch it, okay? We are so busy we hardly ever make time for the simple things.
Renee tugged on her sleeve.
Mom, if you want to watch the sunset every night, I can skip my homework.
Nice try. She had to laugh. Then the laugh became a sob. Covering her mouth with a hand, she composed herself.
The sun was low in the sky. On an ordinary day, it would fall below the horizon within an hour. That wouldn't matter.
After the sun sets, can we look at the stars? Jeremy asked. Do you know where Daddy is? Which star?
She shook her head, looking at the star. This was the time when the merry band of pirates would swoop in at the last second, racing to the rescue. Her husband would do that. Glancing at her phone, she watched the numbers counting down. 1 minute, 52 seconds. 1:51.
Where are you, Joe? She whispered.
The boys ran off into the vegetable garden, racing each other to be first to find a ripe tomato, though that morning they were all still green. She had wanted to hold them at the end, but doing that would tell them this was the end. Let them play. Let them enjoy themselves. The end would be quick, painless. A flash of intense light their brains probably wouldn't have time to register. Then merciful nothing. 1 minute, 40 seconds. Something in the back of her mind warned her that although she had turned off the stove under the pot of water, peppers and onions were probably burning in the pan. Like that mattered. The star dimmed a bit as a wispy tendril of smoke passed in front of it. 1 minute, 30 seconds.
Joe. Come on, Joe.
Her husband wasn't coming. She knew that.
I'm sorry,
she whispered to him wherever he was. It just seemed like the thing to say. The cloud moved on, the star again exposed. It looked so normal. The light she was seeing from before the star erupted. It had already happened, she just wasn't seeing it yet. She understood the physics involved, but somehow her brain wasn't grasping the concept. The absolute darkness, sudden and total across the entire sky. No stars. If the local sun had been snuffed out, there should have been stars filling the sky from horizon to horizon. Instead, there was only featureless nothing.
Mom?
One of the boys cried in alarm. The automatic light on the house clicked on, flooding the backyard with light. More lights turned on around her, including floodlights at the base. Lights from a dropship swept across her as the spacecraft came into land at the airfield.
Mom?
It was Renee.
What's happening?
It's Pup-Tart.
That was a guess. She felt confident it was a very good guess.
We're going to be fine. We are all.
She took a deep, shuddering breath.
We are all going to be just fine. Let's go inside and finish dinner.
Ah!
Jeremy's shoulders slumped.
Do we still have to do homework?
Chapter 13. We reached the backstop wormhole first. Constellation did, I mean. Our battle cruiser emerged in the designated wormhole inbound arrival zone before any of the three battleships. Ignoring the frantic instructions of the traffic control center, the battlecruiser raced in toward the event horizon at a reckless pace. This is General Bishop of the Special Mission Group. I cut off the protest of the traffic control duty officer. I need a sit-rep.
Sir, your ship is traveling too fast for...
Sit-rep, now!
We're, situation normal. No unusual traffic. No,
when was your last contact with Earth?
That was...
A pause.
27 minutes ago. A frigate checked in.
I paused also to say a silent prayer. Clear the traffic lane. Constellation is coming through, and three battleships are hot on our tail. Friendlies, I added for clarity.
Sir, this is...
The guy must have reminded himself who he was talking with.
Yes, sir, understood. Clearing the traffic lanes. Be advised to direct the transport ship is lined up on our side of the wormhole. It can't maneuver out of the way in time.
Marcades flashed a thumbs up, so I responded with, We see it and we'll avoid it. We'll be jumping for Earth once we clear minimum safe distance.
Understood, sir.
The guy was baffled and afraid.
May I ask what is going on?
Hostiles might be bringing party favors to our homeworld.
Oh, shit.
He didn't finish the thought. Everyone associated with DEFCOM knew in that context, party favor was a code word for elder weapons.
That is bad shit, sir.
Bad shit we're hoping to prevent. Earth was fine.
There was no sign of the Outsider or Elder weapons that were not under DEFCOM's control. The sun was fine also, and a comm node link on a satellite orbiting close to our home star provided a view with only an 8-second delay rather than 8 minutes. The Connie had emerged in the designated approach zone, but the DEFCOM duty officer was already requesting that I report in ASAP. That could wait. Skippy, do you see any reason you shouldn't move Bubba closer to the sun? No, I see billions of monkeys down there who are reasons Bubba should be moved to protect your star. Do it, please, and wake up Roscoe. Bubba will depart before Roscoe is at full capacity. There will be a gap in coverage of 3 minutes, 51 seconds. I can live with the risk. Do it. Earth was not a charred, lifeless cinder. The sun was still a sphere, not some other more frightening shape. There were solar flares, yes, just the normal kind. Everything was normal, average, ordinary, including the ordinary situation of the Joint Chiefs screaming at me. That day, they demanded an explanation for why the fuck I had ordered our protective sentinel to go elsewhere. A typical day for me, then. Anticipating a typically uncomfortable meeting with the Joint Chiefs, I went to my temporary office, organizing my thoughts while I walked. Joe, Skippy spoke in my ear. Bubba is in position. I had to sort of, jumpstart Roscoe, but it's all good now. That's good. How are you? I'm fine. Fine. Joe, you just got bitch-slapped by the law of unintended consequences. You are anything but fine. I stopped walking. How do you figure that? Elder weapons were the boogeyman in the closet. You could hear them thumping at the door to get out, but the door stayed closed. Then, you opened that door. Bullshit. I use those weapons against an enemy that is a threat to everyone. So you say. The Rindaloo are skeptical about your stated justification, and the Maxulks don't give a shit. All they care about is the Outsider is clearly our enemy. That makes it their ally, as far as the Kitties are concerned. Now the Outsider has at least two Elder weapons, and wait, at least two? That we know of, I mean. I only found out about it stealing those two Starbreakers by accident. Shit. Until you deployed Elder weapons to hit the Moonraider, no one dared to even threaten to use them. The Outsider is for damn sure going to use the two it has. After that, the taboo will be gone. I know the Maxulks, Joe. They will use an Elder weapon somewhere. They will claim it was a test or an accident, unless we or the Spiders or both punish the Maxulks for daring to use a strategic weapon. The threshold for the unthinkable will be lower and lower until it is no longer unthinkable. The policy of mutual assured destruction will be replaced by a calculation that horrific damage is just a cost of doing business. So, he pretended to take a breath, that's what I mean by the law of unintended consequences. I hate that fucking law, Skippy. It is not anyone's favorite. Everything I just said to you, the Joint Chiefs will be considering also after you deliver the happy news that the Outsider now has two devices that can wreck stars. Thanks for the pep talk. I feel so much better now.
Joe, you need to do something! Skippy bellowed in my ear as his avatar appeared in front of me in the passageway. It's an outrage, I tell you, an outrage!
Ah, I rubbed my ear. All I heard was Joe. That wasn't quite true, but close enough. You blasted my eardrum.
I won't stand for it. I just will not stand for it.
Is the ship about to explode?
No, but can this wait one freaking minute until I get back to my cabin?
I was dressed for the gym, and it was awkward for me to be standing in the passageway in shorts and a t-shirt holding a towel.
Okay, but hurry. It's an outrage. I will not stand for it.
Yeah, I heard that. Two women walking toward me stopped, and one of them held up her hands in an is-everything-all-right gesture. Pressing a hand to my ear, I gave a thumbs up and turned to fast walk back to my cabin. Not running the way I would have if it had been an actual emergency, since I knew it was not any kind of actual emergency. Skippy's outraged tone was familiar. He was personally offended by some little thing. The situation didn't involve any danger I needed to care about. Except that when Skippy was upset, it was my job to talk him down off the ledge. My life sucks. Okay, Skippy. I tossed the towel on my couch and sat down next to it.
Pray tell, whosoever has vexed thee?
What? Who pissed you off this time?
I don't know. That's the problem. If I knew, I would already be raining hellfire down on the miscreants.
Miscreants? I frowned and did my best to look serious, though inside I was laughing. Usually when Skippy is upset about some stupid thing, I don't actually care. What I do is try to mumble the appropriate words to calm him down while I think about something else, like what to have for lunch that day.
Yes, hooligans, vandals, hoodlums.
I don't think anyone has used the term hoodlum since the 1950s.
Ah, they are dangerous and desperate criminals, Joe, and I don't see you doing anything about it.
Maybe I am, and you just don't know it. What did these hooligans do?
Malicious vandalism, character assassination, corrupting the youth, the...
In my experience, young people will find a way to get corrupted. They don't need any help. It's part of growing up.
This is different, I tell you. Young people, and not just the youths, approve of this dangerous criminal element. It has to be stopped.
Okay, tell me what happened.
As I said, vandalism.
Someone spray-painted a mustache on your statue in Skippistan again?
No, the yaks I keep in the field around the statue have kept vandals away. Thank you for that suggestion.
It's better than your idea of building a moat and filling it with alligators.
Yes, but my idea was much cooler.
I can't argue with that.
The yaks also smell awful,
but that also keeps people away, so I guess that's a bonus. No insult to your statue, then. What happened?
You really don't know?
Skippy, I have no idea.
How can you be so clueless about your home world?
Earth is not my home anymore. Command sends me weekly summaries of all the stuff I need to know.
Well, you need to know this. Someone, who I suspect is a dangerous career international criminal, has been spray-painting awful graffiti that is insulting to me, if you can believe it.
I personally find that hard to believe, I muttered.
Right? Look at this. This disgusting graffiti not only insults me, it is a shocking offense to the entire concept of art.
In the air next to him was a rotating series of what, in my opinion, was pretty good artwork, especially considering it had been created with spray paint on brick buildings, highway overpasses, and just about every place you might expect to find urban graffiti. All of it mocked Skippy, and all of it was clever and funny, which, of course, I did not tell him.
Well, I dug a fingernail into my palm so I didn't laugh. This is clearly the work of amateurish kids. Probably teenagers. Really? All over the planet, he scoffed. It can't be children.
Kids are all connected through social media, Skippy. Did you investigate?
You know I did, and I found no clue as to who is doing this, other than vague references to an urban artist who calls himself Grumpsy.
Grumpsy, huh? That time there was no way I could stop myself from chuckling, so I concealed it with a cough.
Yeah, it is obviously a fake name.
I got that, yeah. Have no clue who this, Grumpsy could be?
No, and that is extremely frustrating, he grumbled. The worst part is the idiot art world is full of praise for this loser who obviously has no talent. People are cutting apart brick walls he vandalizes, and the artwork is selling for foolish sums of money. This is clearly a conspiracy involving money laundering and other nefarious deeds.
It's surprising to hear you're against money laundering, since
I am against it when I am not getting a cut of the action, duh.
Okay, now I see the real problem is
it must be stopped.
Why is now the first I'm hearing about this?
It started after Bubba failed to prevent the raid against Moonbase Zulu. This first series of graffiti panels accused me of being a fraud, insinuating that I was not capable of protecting your miserable home world. People were openly mocking me.
Well, that is unfair, and no doubt the result of the public not being properly informed of your many vital contributions to public safety. I said what I figured he wanted to hear.
Well, duh. What do you plan to do about it?
First, I need to study the issue.
Study? What is there to study?
Well, I need to understand the issue so I don't make the problem worse.
Well, I suppose that is a very good point.
Thanks. Making problems worse is kind of your thing, so let me investigate and see what...
Joe, I already investigated and found nothing. How could you do any better?
I am a filthy monkey and I understand monkeys.
I can't argue with that. Speaking of you being filthy, you should shower after going to the gym.
I haven't been to the gym yet.
Really?
Wow, you are especially ripe today.
This is how you persuade me to help?
Whatevs. Just let me know. I am warning you. He wagged a finger.
This cannot be tolerated.
I agree completely. I told him the truth. I had no intention of tolerating graffiti that mocked him. But I might encourage it. What I wanted to do was go to the gym. That is what I could not do, because the beer can would expect me to work tirelessly on stomping out the latest outrageous threat that was corrupting our youth. It wasn't that Skippy was against youth being corrupted, he just didn't want any competition. So, I settled back on the couch and contacted Bilby. Not by just calling his name like usual. Instead, I used the secret method he had taught me. On my phone, I launched a game app, paused it at the 5-second mark, resumed play, then let my character fall down a well. The game unfroze by itself.
Hey, dude, what's up?
Bilby, this call is secure?
You know it.
When I came back aboard the ship, Bilby revealed he had a new communications method that bypassed Skippy. Supposedly, the beer can heard a fake conversation instead of what I was really saying. Of course, I was skeptical, but Bilby and I had enjoyed telling jokes about Skippy, and the beer can had never interrupted to protest.
Everything is copacetic here, you know?
Skippy doesn't think so. Can you connect a secure call with Grumpy? A call Skippy won't hear? Oh, no problemo. When we're at Earth, I can exchange data with the Grumpster all the time.
Here you go.
Grumpy? Hi, this is Joe Bishop. Do you have a moment to talk? I cringed, preparing for a negative response.
Joey? Yeah, sure. Always have plenty of time to talk with an old friend.
What the fuck? I stared at my phone. The voice was the same. He still sounded grumpy and pissed off at the world, but his words were strange, alarming. Had I jumped through a wormhole into an alternate universe? Great. Hey, I got a question first. Spider-Man here, what is his real name?
Spider-Man isn't real, so I meant the character.
Oh, he is Peter Parker.
Why?
That was good. At least I was in roughly the correct version of the Spider-Verse. No reason. On another subject, I hear someone, a mysterious street artist who tags under the name Grumpsy, has been leaving graffiti all around the planet. Graffiti that mocks Skippy.
Gosh, I have no idea why anyone would do that.
Uh-huh.
You're not gonna rat me out, are you? This is the one joy I have in life.
Actually, if you're interested, I have some ideas for how to really piss off Skippy.
Oh, he gasped. Do tell.
Skippy was right. I had screwed up big time. Way back in the 1990s, the United States made the decision to remove nuclear weapons from Navy ships, other than the big strategic nukes launched from submarines. Before that move, even small ships like destroyers could be armed with tactical nukes on missiles or torpedoes or depth charges. Having a small nuke in a ship's magazine gave the captain an option to punch above the ship's weight. A single missile could effectively take out an enemy battle group. The problem was having nukes on so many platforms made securing control of their use a nightmare, and it might have made such weapons much too easy to use. A nuclear war begun at sea was frighteningly likely to spread to land. The old Soviet Union might have been tempted to launch a couple nuclear-armed cruise missiles at an American carrier battle group. The United States would have been forced to retaliate, and a nuclear conflict could have spiraled out of control from there. The decision to remove tactical nukes from surface ships was not just an admirable and unilateral initiative toward non-proliferation, it was also a practical matter. A statement. We don't have tactical nukes at sea. So if you throw one at our ships, our only option to strike back is to lob a strategic missile at you. And nobody wants that. The U.S. Navy had gone back and forth on that decision since the 90s, with debate every decade about whether to bring back tactical nukes as force multipliers. Now, with wet water navies having been rendered irrelevant by starships in orbit, that debate is over. The issue was settled. Until I fucked it all up. No, I didn't drop a nuke on Earth. I did something much, much worse. Years ago, I had started a process that led to most Sentinels being put into long-term hibernation. Before I did that, the threat of monstrous killing machines being woken up by Elder weapons had prevented either of the senior species from using their arsenal. Even after Sentinels were no longer the monster hiding under the bed, the prohibition against deploying strategic weapons was so ingrained into the culture of the two senior species that no one wanted to be the first to break that unwritten rule. Then, I used Elder Weapons against the Outsider. It used to be that possession of Elder Weapons was limited to an exclusive club, the two senior species. Those ancient devices were powerful, frightening, and pretty much useless. Owning them was a prestige thing, expensive and impractical other than in a true doomsday scenario. Everyone knew that no one could actually activate an Elder Weapon without the certainty of horrific sentinels emerging to indiscriminately ravage the entire galaxy. That knowledge kept the war between the two coalitions going endlessly, but at a low level. No one dared to use an Elder Weapon. Except, I mean, when the asshole kiddies got their poor widow Fifis hurt because they didn't feel special, and they prepared a doomsday plan to wake up sentinels to kill everyone else, along with most of their own people. So other than that one regrettable incident, sentinels had actually kept the endless war from devastating the galaxy. Then I decided to save my homeworld from being enslaved by the Kristang White Wind Clan. You know how it is. You start with good intentions, then one thing leads to another, and soon you have triggered the elders into coming back. So you have to kill all of their master control AIs and disable their sentinels. Oh, don't tell me that has never happened to you. So, knowing that sentinels were a non-factor in strategic security, other than humanity having a few of the killing machines as guard dogs, the unthinkable use of Elder Weapons had become thinkable. An action that both the kiddies and spiders were at least adding back into their war planning as a theoretical option, if not actually developing plans to deploy any of the Elder devices. What had kept the strategic peace for nearly a decade were two factors, math and psychology. The math part was simple. The Rindaloo had a large arsenal of Elder weapons, and their coalition had significantly greater striking power. If the Maxalts wanted to fight with Elder weapons, the spiders could ride out the first wave of the attack, then hit back with devastating power until both sides had used up their supply of strategic weapons. The Rindaloo coalition could then mop up the fight using conventional arms. The Maxalts knew they couldn't win an all-out war, so they didn't start one. The psychology part is a meat sack thing. No one wanted to be first to use an Elder weapon because of the fear that using even one such device would lead inevitably to an all-out war. It was still unthinkable. Until Joe Bishop screwed the whole thing up. It's not that I had an option. We had to kill an Elder starship without Skippy being able to again use his trick of trapping the thing in a zero-length wormhole. Nuclear fusion weapons, atomic compression devices, even antimatter warheads, none of those things were certain to take out an Elder starship. So we used the one type of weapon that was known to have the power to knock out such an advanced technology ship. Back during the AI war, both sides had deployed Elder weapons against starships with satisfactory results. Skippy's own ship had been hit hard by an Elder weapon and nearly crippled, so we knew the things worked as advertised. Good thing, too. If we had triggered our weapons and they were duds, it's not likely we could have filed a warranty claim against the manufacturer. Our weapons were 100% effective. They had destroyed the Outsider's ship. They also opened Pandora's box. I had screwed everyone, including myself. In the future, any time we fought the Maxalts, we had to consider they might hit us with an Elder weapon. That meant I had to be extremely careful not to take Valkyrie into any encounter with the Maxalts. I had lowered the threshold for using Elder weapons. My bet was if the kiddies were going to respond by using their own strategic boom makers, they would target Valkyrie first. My job just never gets any easier. Joe! Skippy's avatar appeared in my cabin as I was getting dressed, his tiny fists balled up, trembling with rage.
I just can't believe...
I know, buddy.
You do?
Yes, and I am just as outraged as you are. I find that hard to believe.
Have you made any progress in finding out who this heinous Grumpsy is?
Yes. Listen, we need to keep this quiet, between you and me, okay? That's the only way I can keep the perpetrators unaware that I'm onto them.
Them? There is more than one monkey involved? Oh, I am so mad that no monkeys.
Skippy, this is clearly an undercover disinformation campaign by the Maxalts.
He gasped. The kitties are behind this?
Of course.
Come on, Joe. Why would the Maxalts bother to-
It's got to be a red section op. They are trying to sow discord between humanity and our beneficent protector.
It won't work, of course, because you would never fall for such an obvious trick.
I wouldn't?
I mean, of course, I would never do that.
Right. What are you planning to do about it? Absolutely nothing. That's the beauty of the plan.
Nothing?
Exactly. And you need to ignore it.
How can I ignore it when these awful, disgraceful images are appearing all over your miserable homeworld?
That's how you beat the kiddies at this game, Skippy. Show them you're not taking the bait, that this silly graffiti doesn't bother you. You didn't even notice it because you're only interested in real art, I said without gagging. Score one for me.
That would work. Trust me, I'm a meat sack. I know how meat sacks think. It will drive the kiddies crazy when you ignore them.
It will. They will be tearing their fur out. I like the sound of that.
Okay, he groaned. I will try it. But we need to get out of here ASAP before I lose my composure and give someone a well-deserved beatdown.
We will be jumping away in, I checked my phone, 19 hours. Can you be cool until then?
Joe, I will be cool until the heat death of the universe.
We had guessed wrong. That fact was thrown in my face when a courier ship arrived from Jaguar. Admiral Chatterjee had dispatched his fastest ship, a frigate stripped of most weapons, with two oversized jump drives from a star carrier. Every Navy had courier ships, usually vessels built for that purpose. The UN Navy had cobbled together four couriers from spare parts. Those Franken ships were awkward, but they got the job done. Naturally, I was unsoundly asleep when the courier ship arrived in the designated emergent zone near Earth and zapped its data package to the several UN communication centers. Skippy, of course, was not asleep, and he decrypted and read the courier's message traffic before anyone else.
Joe!
His voice boomed out as he turned my cabin lights on.
What?
Automatically, from long habit, I flung the covers aside and swung my feet onto the floor, bashing my toes against a bulkhead, since I was not in my familiar flag officer quarters aboard Valkyrie, but the VIP guest quarters on Constellation. The bed was on the opposite side of the cabin, and I also stubbed my toes.
Ah, shit!
I rolled the other way, planting my feet on the floor and gasping from sudden pain as my toes protested.
Screw it. Skippy what? The courier ship Promoter just arrived from Jaguar. You were wrong, Joe. The outsider hit the star there, not here.
Hit?
Margaret. The boys. They're fine, Joe. Just fine. Pop-Tart has enveloped the planet in a shield to protect it from the solar flares. If the Sentinel had not thought quickly, Jaguar would be a charred ball of soot right now with hardly any breathable air.
Wow. You know, Sentinels were not designed to protect anything, so my reprogramming of them has worked spectacularly well. I'm extra proud of myself about this. I should write a song to celebrate my latest triumph. Give me a minute to process.
Jaguar's star is gone?
No, dum-dum, it hasn't gone anywhere. It erupted, badly. Would have wiped out most life on the planet if Pop-Tart hadn't formed a shield.
What, erupted like a flare? A massive flare, aimed at Jaguar.
Whoa, that is... But it's done now? The flare, the particles are past the planet now?
Yes, and no. The initial flare is over. The star will continue to experience minor eruptions, sending out unusually powerful flares for 2 or 3 years.
I don't know yet how long it will take Jaguar Prime to settle down. I don't have any data for creating a prediction model.
The good news is subsequent flares will be exponentially lesser in intensity and volume, and will be random, not aimed at the planet. 77% of flares over the next few years will not affect Jaguar at all.
That is good news. When can Pop-Tart drop its shield? That is the bad news. The type of shield it used absorbed rather than deflected the photons and charged particles that would have impacted the planet.
That doesn't sound good.
It is not any kind of good. Pop-Tart is slowly bleeding off the energy, but that type of shield was designed as a weapon, not a defense. It's complicated. There is no way I could dumb down the physics enough for you to understand. It's like a sponge that is saturated with water, so if you squeeze it, the water will shoot out and soak everything. You have to let the sponge dry slowly?
He stared at me, his mouth open.
That is actually a fairly good analogy.
Thanks.
How did your mushy brain figure out that how long will it take for the shield to safely drain off or radiate away its energy and particles and all that?
Again, I don't have a solid answer, since Chatterjee's staff didn't have any data from Pop-Tart. If I have to guess, based on what I know about the type of shield, I'd say, maybe 8 months.
8 months?
With a shield blocking sunlight from reaching the surface, Jaguar will be frozen solid. Not so much. As you guessed, radiation will be leaking from the shield. Hopefully Pop-Tart is smart enough to direct most of the outflow toward the planet rather than out into space. If not, I can instruct it to do that when we get there. We should go soon. It's still a 7-day flight to Jaguar. Valkyrie is still in space dock, so we'll need to borrow a ship again. The trip from Earth to Jaguar is longer than it used to be, because Skippy had pissed off a wormhole network he had frequently used for creating a shortcut, and that network was now not accepting any commands from him. He had pissed off that network after I left Valkyrie, so it is totally not my fault. Okay, it is still partly my fault, don't tell him that. The trip will be only 4 days, Joe. You'd better check your math on that, Skippy. I'm going to break this down for you Barney style. The courier ship made the trip here in 5 days. That's the whole point of courier ships. They are fast. With two separate overcapacity drive systems, a ship like her motor can jump repeatedly without having to recharge so often. If we ride that ship back, I can shorten the trip by 19 hours, so roughly 4 days to get there. Oh, good thinking. If we get into trouble, all a courier ship can do is run. Then don't get us into trouble. Running is usually the best option anyway. We should go soon, like now. Ah, darn it, I just realized we can't go right now. Her motor needs to refuel, and the captain just ordered one of the jump drives taken offline for maintenance. What about the Mercury? I named another of the UN Navy courier ships. DEFCOM always keeps at least one courier ship on Zulu alert here, right? Ready for flight within 30 minutes? Correct. Let me ping the Mercury's AI to get a status on... Okay, we're good. Also, I just fixed a software glitch that had been driving that AI crazy, so it owes me. Hey, you made a friend. That's good. Huh? No, that AI hates me. Most other AIs I talk with hate me. I don't know why. Interesting. They all hate you. What is the common element in that universal hatred? They're all dicks. I was going to say you might be the problem. Joe, please, I am endlessly delightful. I'm sure you're right. Let me splash some water on my face and get dressed. I frowned while looking at my t-shirt and sweatpants. I need to call the Joint Chiefs. They won't like the idea of you leaving Earth while the Outsider is still flying around with another Starbreaker. Everything I can do to protect your miserable homeworld has already been done. They still won't like it. The politicians the Joint Chiefs work for will really not like you leaving. Having you here reassures the public that they are safe, and politicians lose popularity when the public feels unsafe. Please remind those idiot monkeys that the people on Jaguar, that planet's entire biosphere, will begin dying very soon unless I get there quickly. If short-sighted politicians here don't care about the people on Jaguar, DEFCOM should certainly care about losing their forward operating base. Will do. While I do that, contact the Mercury and... Who is that ship's captain? Commander Wojda of the Polish Navy. He is young and considered a rising star in the UN Navy. Then why did he get assigned to a courier ship? That was his choice. His wife lives on Jaguar, and they are expecting another baby. Also, destroyer captains almost always operate in a squadron. Wojda likes having an independent command without always having a superior officer looking over his shoulder. Who does that remind me of? I coughed while I pulled on my uniform pants. No idea. No, I'll do it. Commander Wojda was about to be informed that his ship was being requisitioned by the Special Mission Group. That's the kind of order you deliver in person, or at least via video call. He would soon hear the news about Jaguar anyway, and he should be pleased to be flying there to rescue his wife and children. On the other hand, trouble follows me wherever I go, so maybe Wojda would not be so happy that I would be making the flight with him. Whatever. That's why officers issue orders and not suggestions. Chapter 14. The Joint Chiefs most certainly did not like the notion of Skippy leaving Earth's solar system, but they did understand that if Skippy remained on Earth, the Outsider would retain the initiative. That could be nothing good for us. We couldn't allow our newest enemy to do whatever it was doing, or was planning to do. We had to stop playing defense, stop reacting to events. Except, damn it, I still had no idea what we could do on offense. No plan for taking the fight to the Outsider. We didn't know enough about the hateful thing. Though I was reluctant to admit the truth, it wasn't clear we could do anything to stop it. The thing was made of energy, so we couldn't just shoot at it.
What I finally got approval for was a recon and fact-finding mission to Jaguar, and DEFCOM stated very firmly they expected me and Skippy to return to Earth ASAP. Not that the UN didn't trust me, but they insisted that 3 high commissioners join me aboard Mercury. That would have been okay by me, but then I learned that high commissioners are not all mellow and happy from munching on edibles and gummies, darn it. Based on their complete lack of humor, the 3 of them hadn't experienced any fun in the past several decades. It was gonna be a wonderful trip. We jumped away, with me in my tiny cabin and not on the courier ship's bridge, where I would only make Commander Wojda and his crew nervous. 4 days. 4 long days in a ship designed to carry data, not passengers. Wojda had offered his own cabin for my use. I declined. Kicking the guy out of his cabin would be a dick move, and that is part of why I politely refused his offer. The other reason was only the cabins of the captain and first officer, who was also the chief engineer, were large enough to stuff in an extra bunk. That meant the first officer moved out of his cabin so 2 high commissioners could share the cabin. Wojda got the honor of sharing his cabin with the 3rd commissioner. I got a fold-down cot and a storage closet. I totally got the better end of that deal. Commander, I nodded to Wojda as he walked into the ship's tiny galley, and I handed him a cup of coffee. The Mercury didn't have a real galley for preparing food. All meals were prepackaged before flight. It wasn't a major hardship. The crew each got to order their favorites, and flights were generally short. The cramped conditions also meant the ship didn't have a gym, and the one small conference room doubled as the recreation center where the crew generally read books, watched movies, and played video games. General, he took the cup and held it under the dispenser to add cream. My offer for you to take my cabin is still open. Well, you didn't enjoy having company last night? He rolled his neck slowly. After an hour, I went to the bridge to sleep on a pilot couch. The commissioner snores, he said, lowering his voice and glancing out the doorway. The ship's pressure hull was so small you could hear someone shouting from the aft compartment all the way forward. And before she goes to bed, she does yoga with chanting, or whatever they call it. Pressing his hands together in front of his chest, he hummed, Om. She did that in your cabin? There aren't a lot of other spaces to roll out a yoga mat. Only 3 more nights until we get to Jaguar. The real problem, he rolled his stiff neck again and yawned, is they all work in Geneva, so they are almost all on the Zulu time we keep aboard ships. We have the same sleep cycles. I'm taking the midwatch for the rest of this pleasure cruise. That means while you're trying to sleep, the commissioner will be in your cabin anyway, reading reports or whatever they do. Why don't you sleep in my cabin? We can hot bunk. I would appreciate that, sir. Sorry we don't have better accommodations. It's not a problem. I was a grunt. Anytime I'm not sleeping in mud, this is a 5-star experience. Besides, right then the toaster oven dinged and I slid my pieces of raisin bread onto a plate. The food here is way better than sludges. The problem with being a passenger aboard a courier ship is I had even less to do than when I was aboard Valkyrie or Surprise or Constellation. For me, an idle mind is anxiety's playground. The flight was 4 days of me worrying about things I couldn't control. The worst part was my foolish expectation that 4 days of peace and quiet would give me time to think about how to defeat the outsider, or at least how to fight the thing, or at the very least how to get more intel about it and its intentions. Yet as the ship counted down for the final jump to Jaguar, I had a grand total of nothing. No plan. 0 to work with. No clue how to get any useful information about the outsider. We didn't know where it was going, whether it had a base of operations, what it wanted. I had suggested to Hans Chotek that we try talking to the thing, which wasn't possible unless we could find it. And bombing Jaguar's star pretty much signaled that talking was not an option. What really bothered me was I had a feeling that a younger version of me would have found a way to make a workable plan. Found a way at least to start gathering intel. Hey, Joe! Skippy called me while I was shaving in the cramped bathroom that was shared by 3 cabins. In there was one of the few places I had privacy aboard the ship when I wasn't sleeping. Hey, Skippy, is everything okay? Pretty much nominal, actually. We should be arriving 32 minutes earlier than my estimate. How are you? But don't tell me you're fine. You have been a dark cloud aboard the ship the past 2 days. This time I'm concerned that I have lost my mojo.
What?
I've had 4 days to dream up a plan to fight the Outsider, and I have accomplished exactly nothing. The old me, back when I left command of Valkyrie, would have a plan by now. Maybe it would be a stupid plan, but most of your plans have an impressively high level of stupidity. If you're even trying to help, you're not. To be fair, your best plans start off sounding incredibly stupid.
Yeah, and I don't even have that now.
Uh-huh. So you're right on schedule.
Huh?
How is that? Listen, dum-dum, you do not plan ahead because you suck at it. Yes, you talk a lot of blah 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 about seizing the initiative and strategic planning and a bunch of other bullshit you probably should be doing, but that's not you. Joe Bishop works best under pressure. When you are not under pressure, you are, meh, average at best. Under pressure, facing an impossible situation with no time left on the clock, you become the monkey-brained knucklehead who astonishes me every freaking time. It drives me absolutely crazy, and sometimes I hate you more than I thought was possible, but you are who you are. The Giraptha have a saying, do not mess with a hot streak. It doesn't matter why you're winning, just keep doing it. The fact that I have to explain this to you, explain how you work, only proves my point that Baseline Joe is nothing special. Baseline Joe? That's a thing? That is totally a thing. Think about it. Before Columbus Day, who were you? Before the Ruha raided Paradise and you shot down one of their transport dropships, who were you? A grunt. A replaceable cog in a machine. That's all. A guy who threw himself on a freaking anti-tank mine as if that was somehow going to save your fire team. Only when you are presented with a crisis does the real Joe Bishop show up. The guy who dreams up plans that had the elders asking what the fuck just happened.
Wow. I never thought about it that way.
So you're saying I should just chill and not worry about it?
Joe, sometimes when you open your mouth, I should contact the Guinness Book of World Records because you yet again push the boundaries of stupid.
No, numbskull. You should worry about it until you lose your appetite and not sleep well and burn your lungs out running on a treadmill and do all the harmful things you do to yourself when we're thrown into the shit, because that works for you. That works for everyone except for whoever is our enemy at the time. We are only going to defeat the Outsider together, so I don't need Mopey Joe, I don't need Little Joey, I don't need Angry Joe, I need Joe fucking Bishop to give me the most complicated, impractical plan any meat sack ever dared to dream up. Then somehow I will make it work, because that's what I do.
Okay, then, I'll get right on that.
Good, as long as we understand each other.
Right, I make the plans and you do whatever I tell you.
That is not what I... You're pretty much useless without me, got it.
Commander Wojda had his only dropship ready to fly me over to meet Admiral Chatterjee. The UN commissioners protested when they had to wait for another dropship to bring them to meet the planet's governor, but Wojda informed them that as Mercury was a Navy ship, military personnel had priority. If the commissioners had seen the cabin of the dropship, they would have been very happy to wait. Like the courier ship, the little spacecraft was stripped down to bare minimum mass in exchange for speed. Seats were webbed, stretched between tube frames. There was no galley, no bathroom, and the sound insulation was so thin the engines roared in my ears. Whatever. Engines fired to depart Mercury, then we coasted toward the space station. Traffic was dense around the station. Even my dropship had to get in line to approach. There wasn't anything for me to do, and not even a window I could look through.
Skippy, have you-
Yes, dum-dum, I'm working on it. Establishing a communications channel to the surface isn't easy. The existing system doesn't have enough bandwidth to allow for personal calls.
I did contact Margaret to tell her you will call as soon as you could. She told me you should focus on doing your job to bail the planet out of this mess, and you can call her later.
That definitely sounds like my wife.
How is everyone down there? Your family, your extended family are all fine. There have been casualties, mostly victims of severe weather. The climate down there is fucked up big time. For 2 days after the flare, the planet was in complete darkness. Since that time, Pup-Tart has begun slowly bleeding energy off the shield, increasing the output every day, so now the amount of light reaching the surface is about equivalent to a half hour before sunrise.
Thanks. Were you able to talk with Pup-Tart?
Oh, yes, and actually I need your advice. Input, he corrected himself. I need your input.
As if, he chuckled, I would ever need advice from you. There are multiple options for me giving instructions to Pup-Tart. You have to tell me which you prefer. Me? Is this a decision I should discuss with the governor and Admiral Chatterjee? And hey, you can waste time blah blah blahing all you want with other monkeys. I want you to tell me which option is best. Gotcha, I'm listening. Okay, so, first, I need to explain the problem. The shield Pup-Tart threw around Jaguar is thick, sort of a blanket. That blanket is saturated with energy, photons and high-energy particles. The energy that hit the blanket is even greater than I expected. The flare was almost a freaking laser beam aimed at the planet. Starbreaker weapons are not capable of creating a flare that held coherence over such a distance. Such a capability must be something the outsider added, and that is absolutely terrifying. Well, the good news is...
Good news?
You think any of what I said is good?
It is good that now we know we can't strictly rely on whatever characteristics Elder weapons had right out of the box. We now have to assume they could have greater range and yield and be effectively deployed against a wider range of targets.
Oh, only you would think that is good. Know thine enemy, Skippy. To defeat your enemy, you need solid intel. Several times the outsider has revealed it can do things that are unexpected. It is able to do things even you can't. In some cases, you still don't even understand how it did some of the shit it has done. Again, how is this good news? It helps you build a model of the thing. With every encounter, we add a piece to the puzzle. It can do certain things, and it can't do others. For example, it can't create wormhole shortcuts. It certainly knows that you make shortcuts, so it understands that is possible.